Okay, we just started the webinar and we did our icebreaker. And I'm asking the class what ideas are standing out to you. And we're just sharing those ideas. I'm observing and I saw the word wall. Okay, great. Was it an interactive word wall? I think the most important thing about a word wall is that the teacher uses it for language and literacy instruction. But sometimes it's just like a spelling chart for kids. And then I used to give students their own personal word walls for English language learners. And sometimes those were sight words. Upper grade kids can even struggle with sight words. I knew this principal, and a lot of his upper grade elementary kids couldn't spell the word the and just really basic words. And so he inherited the school's issues. So he gave all the fourth, fifth, and sixth graders a school-wide spelling test. And he gave it on the TV, and it was in the classroom, and he even graded them himself. He's like, they are going to know these sight words. So, you know, don't underestimate sight words, even for upper grade kids. They struggle with those, too, not just for first grade. I like the personal word wall. Yes, because sometimes it helps them to just have it at their desk right there. These things can be done virtually, too, dictionary.com and apps and things like that. Okay, great. And then Priya says, yes, it's interactive since it's a bilingual class. She uses it. That's excellent. That's really great. We used RTI in Georgia. Okay, good. Excellent. Thank you for the ideas. Teacher I'm observing has a silent reading time every day. Oh, yeah. Is it truly silent or do they read in buddies, partner reading kind of thing? In this module, I read about free reading. That was one of my favorite times of the day. I had a big rug. When I taught elementary and the third graders and even the fifth graders sometimes, we would all go to the rug and we would just get books and we'd all just read on the rug. There were like 15 or 20 of us. And that was the best time of the day. We were just all sort of together, get away from the desks. I'm not a big fan of sitting in desks all day. So just sitting together on the rug and reading was like the best part. And I'm a big fan of buddy reading, too, because it's supportive of the students, you know, nagging students to sit and read on their own for half an hour is no fun for anyone. RTI took us from 2 years not meeting AYP to exceeding standards. That's great. So RTI is like types of layers and levels of interventions, right? Intensive interventions. School and it's school-wide. That's really important, too. You're not isolated in your classroom. Anything else, you guys? I see Jenna typing. She uses that time to reteach in small groups anything they have not mastered for the day. That's perfect. Exactly. She's using that time for personalized learning instruction. That's great. I used to love my small group table in the back of the room. I used that a lot for pulling kids out of, you know, to get extra support. Okay. Good. Feel free to add ideas. Okay, here's a few bonus ideas for you guys that I've been thinking about. And then at the end of the webinar, I want to invite you, if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, to learn more about art and literacy and language. So tell me what you guys think of this idea. Have you ever used art, to like fine arts, to enhance your learning for students? Let me just look in the chat window. Feel free to type a response to that question I just posed. Okay, Jenna says, I've observed a teacher that includes book study every Wednesday so students can really delve into the details. That's great. I love it. I'm glad she's making time for that. Okay, so back to the strategy. So what you do is you locate images that you can use, like public domain or that are royalty-free, but that are high-quality art. Now, the good news is a lot of museums are digitizing almost all of their art. The Met in New York is one that just put out, I think, like 300,000 images that you can use. So these are great for teaching vocabulary, for getting kids talking, right? They're not forced conversations. And so students can learn about not just the art, but the purpose is something else. So if you're teaching making inferencing, you might say, how is this mother feeling? What are some words we can use to describe her mind, state of mind? Why do you think the children are positioned the way they are? What might she be thinking? And so you can get into some really in-depth language and conversation to to preface, say, some unit you're doing, make on making inferences, or even social studies or something like that. And Dustin says, world history teacher, introduce each unit with music from that era. That's great. That's another way to get language, because you're hearing lyrics and things like that and getting into it. So this link right here is where, I'll put it in the chat window. It's a short video I made about where you can find free images. And then I like to just find historic images, but the Met Art Museum, again, is opening those up. This picture would be great for unit on Esperanza Rising. Oh, you're right. Yeah, exactly. Or Out of the Dust, the book by Karen Huss about the Dust Bowl, because that was the same time period. I saw a teacher who put paper on the bottom of the table, and the kids pretended to be Michelangelo. Oh, that's great. I love it. They get more insight. So that's my idea for using art, and it's great because it doesn't have the threat of print, and so it's, you know, they're not looking at a wall of print. They're talking authentically. You're listening. You're speaking. You're not yet reading, but it'd be a good segue into reading. Okay, great. Yeah, this would work well with Esperanza Rising, same sort of context. You could put these on the, you know, display. You could have them on a little half sheet if you're still using paper in your classroom. You could put it on a module on a computer like Edmodo or something for students to think about. Okay, any thoughts on that? And Dustin gave us some ideas on how he uses it. On that note, when I went to the Amon Carter, which we'll talk about in a minute, they made Spotify lists, playlists of songs that went with whatever unit of study they were doing. I thought that was a neat and fun way to integrate fine arts with music and art. And that helps language, again, the lyrics. Okay, so here's a bonus teaching idea, too. Who's heard of the Frayer model? I think I said it correctly. It's really just a graphic organizer, and so you put the word in the middle and then the definition in the top left. It can be in the student's own words, or you can kind of talk about it, but it's student-friendly. You can have it already filled in for the student or partially filled in for scaffolding. You put the characteristics of the word in the top right, examples in the bottom left, and then antonyms, non-examples in the bottom right. So I picked an example word, genealogy. That's one you could definitely unpack with students. Words that aren't too easy, but not too rare, right? They might see that word again. Dustin says, I use this for all my vocab. It works well with science. I think it really helps to get in depth, right? So often it seems like we're just scratching the surface with our instruction with vocabulary. So this helps to dig down into some key words the students are going to need to know, democracy, kind of these abstract academic terms. But it's a high-level strategy, and in the PowerPoint, there's a link to a unit of study on this, and it's from Vanderbilt University, and it's a really good little unit. If you have time to look, you could incorporate it into your case study. Okay. Do you guys have any thoughts on those strategies? You may have already known and done these, but I just want to remind you, these would be good to weave into your interventions. Either one of these would be really easy to work on vocabulary. Oh, and this might be a good writing prompt, too. You could have a conversation about the picture and then have the student write about the picture. So find a good piece of art, and again, it depends on the children's age, what might be, you know, of interest to them. You don't want to pick anything overly conceptual. I like realist art. That's why I think photography is really great, because it's real. It's you can describe it really easily. You know, it doesn't get too out there, if you know what I mean. Easy to talk about. So this would be great for it to post on a wall for reference during instruction. Yes, excellent. Oh, the Frayer model, you mean, Alexis? Okay, great. I'm going to move kind of quickly into our case study, and I'm going to share my screen with you guys, and I'm going to share a few examples. I'm going to go through them kind of quickly. I just want to talk about the format, and then I'll go back to the PowerPoint and some tips for you guys. So let me share screen. So feel free to type into the chat window and I'll monitor that too. Let's see, wrong screen. Okay. Can you guys see that? Just type yes in the chat window if you can see my screen. Okay, awesome. Thank you. Okay, so there's part one, which is the description of, or sorry, the background of your English learner or your student. This one is section one, part one. And so it talks about, you know, discuss your learner age upon arrival to the U.S. So this person talks about kind of the little mini history. And if you want to, you can weave in some information about students in that language period. This person, they used a different book at the time from Nancy Hathaway, but they included some statements from the Nancy Hathaway book, which we're not using. And it says, you know, the age one enters the American school system is important. So if you want to sort of weave in some quotes in there, I think it helps. You don't have to, but do include some information from text that we're reading. Okay, and then grade level, again, this is just descriptive, adding a few statements from one of our textbooks. I recommend the Freeman and Freeman book. Also, prior educational experience. I'd say this person did a really good job describing and then connecting back to the text readings. Okay, sociocultural background. So this is basically their culture. So culture where they came from, and then culture now. Okay, and then again, connecting back to the text readings. Languages spoken in the home. All this is pretty straightforward. Immigrant, refugee, or native born. So just, you know, a little bit of short text about that. And then, okay, so previous assessment information. Bullet points are fine to include here. This is very narrative. It has some information, but you can see it's kind of in a narrative, very descriptive format. And then section two, summary of assessments. Okay, so this is just like you would write up any case study. So tell us the data, and then tell us a little bit of a summary about it. So on the left side, left column here, it tells about how they did it and a little bit about, you know, how did it go, the process. So right here on the left column, it kind of just summarizes what happened, the process. On the right side is a summary of the data. And again, the focus is on summarizing. And then interpretation. Now, interpretation is your thoughts on it according to the theoretical kind of orientation you've gained from the readings. Just kind of your own informed opinion about what this data means. So just draw on everything you've read, especially in the Freeman and Freeman book. You might use those rubrics or tables in the very back that tell a bit about, sorry, those are, the rubrics or tables are in the Harrell and Jordan book in the very, very end. But just using all of your resources to kind of interpret what you found out. That part's not long. That's 1, 2, 3, 4 paragraphs. Not very long. Okay, and then you go to the number two assessment, results, interpretation. Okay, and so on. Assessment three, writing assessment. Met in a classroom, sat at a table. I asked Jamalette if she would mind writing for me. And then a very open topic, an important person in my life. I said you could even use the art topic. I think it's okay to do that. A rubric was used to score the writing sample. I think this is great because it breaks down the results. And then interpretation. So site vocabulary, interpretation, content area. Okay, so I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically just one by one, go through the assessments. If you can scan in or take a photograph with your cell phone, there are scanning apps that you can use for your cell phone or tablet, like iPad, and that'll be fine if you just have a basic screenshot or an image of that. Okay, so then there's a protocol at the end here. So I think that was it for that one. And then let's just look at a part two. Let's see. Okay, so part two, here's one. Okay, so based on assessments, this is much shorter. Choose one specific area to pinpoint. Describe how the assessment results were used to choose that intervention. So data informs instruction. It's not like a full-blown huge lesson, but just describe kind of your rationale or why you use that data. And then talk about the intervention. This person focused on word study or morphology, vocabulary, root word kind of thing. Has a very descriptive summary of what happened. And then section two, what was the response to intervention? How did it go, basically? And then this person provided very detailed information about that. If you're doing writing as your focus, I would use a rubric. Okay, and the third part is just kind of speculative recommendations for future instruction. Based on all assessments, what recommendations can you make? And I would use your 50 Strategies book to kind of think about that. And so section four is just your resources that you use. So I'm going to go back to the PowerPoint. Did you guys have a chance? Okay, so you don't have information regarding scores. You might ask the student themselves if they have any, if they've ever, done a library program kind of thing, done any kind. Ask the student themselves what to, for Stephanie, ask them, the student, if they've ever done any kind of assessments and that kind of thing. Sometimes they'll know, and they may be able to retrieve that information for you. If not, just explain that for your situation. Okay, so remember there are two parts. Use the template. I would even just put up the sample. Do you guys have two monitors? I have a second monitor that I use. It's really ginormous. I'm actually going to get a bigger one soon. I cannot work without two monitors. I think it's worth buying two monitors. I would just have the second one up or put it up on an iPad. Can you guys hear me now? Okay, I think my audio went out. I would just have yours, I don't know when it went out, but have a second monitor up, have the sample up while you're working, and then you can kind of compare what you're doing. Can you guys hear me? Okay, so Dustin and Stephanie, just put not available for that part, and maybe just tell a little bit about your situation for that part. Okay, great. So again, this is just straight from the syllabus. Part one, section one, who is your learner? Do the best you can, be as detailed as you can. You may need to do some follow-up by Skype or FaceTime or phone if possible to kind of fill in a little bit there. And then the main part is your summary of assessments. I'm going to send you guys some videos, but honestly, if you go to YouTube, you can look up most of these. I'll find some more additional resources for you guys, though. And then results and interpretation. Okay, and then part two is intervention. It's a much shorter part of your case study. Pick one area to pinpoint. Yes, YouTube is amazing. Can we use the same candidate we used? Yes, that's fine, Priya. Okay, so I'm not going to go through all this. This is in the syllabus, and I just went through it. I think the intervention part is extremely straightforward. And so just, again, I would focus on writing or vocabulary, but it's up to you where your learner is at. I think that vocabulary is always helpful for someone learning a language. I think writing is always helpful for learning a language. So those two are kind of the easiest. I would do one of those if you're looking for an intervention. Okay, I just shared some examples. So tips, be detailed. You don't have to write a novel. It'll go fast if you just do a little bit each day, as best as you can. Don't overwhelm yourself. Use the examples to guide you. Again, have it pulled up as you're working on your own, and then you can kind of cross-check, like, okay, so Jane Doe or whatever wrote XYZ, you know, just kind of compare and that kind of thing. And then make connections to course readings. Assessment results is a summary, but do include some raw data. And then in the interpretation, you can also pose questions. So like, I'm wondering, blah, blah, blah. Or I want to know more about why, blah, blah, blah. Okay, how many sight words should we use? I'd say like 10 or 15. If they cannot read, I would skip that part then. Well, no, you probably don't want to skip that part totally. Pick some easy sight words, just some basic ones that you think they might see, like environmental print, Stephanie. You know, words that they're going to see out and about, you know, stop or, that's probably not a good example. Email me about your situation and I can help you come up with some words. But I would pick some really basic words, like I and me. I mean, one and two letters in them. So just to see. Okay, that's it, you guys. I didn't want to bombard you, but I did send some and post some examples of people's case studies from previous semesters. The last 5 minutes of the webinar, I am just going to give you some very generic resources that you can use. I'm on Blackboard Instant Messenger a lot, and I've been kind of out of it the last 5 days with my allergies, but I'm back. So you can reach me. I'm online a lot. Let's see, Alexis, is there a suggested length of time? I think it describes it in the syllabus, how much time to spend. So check there first. But there's really no length of time. It's just the time you need to do what you need to get done. I know that sounds kind of vague. Dustin, 5 sessions, at least 1 hour each. So yeah, I think it says 3 to 5. Yeah, STAR's coming up. So just do the best you can there. You might have to compress some of it, or, you know, you might need to do 2 sessions back-to-back or that kind of thing. Okay, so that's fine, Alexis. Just keep me posted. Okay, I want to share a few resources for those of you in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Yeah, you can send me a message about that. So Dallas-Fort Worth, has anyone gone to these workshops at the Amon Carter Museum? They're free, and they give you stuff. There's a workshop coming up this Saturday, and there's 3 slots still available. So when you go, they give you, like, a folder. I know, that sounds like, well, big deal. But it has a ton of resources. They do video conferencing. I think that's really cool. So they go into the gallery, and they'll video conference with your school, like if you live in a rural area or whatever. And they also have a program where they talk about reading. And so they connect art to reading. And so, like, they talk about making connections, questioning, visualizing, inferencing, you know, all those comprehension strategies. They teach them with art. And so here's the Spotify list. So they had this art about rainbows. And so they have this Spotify list where all the songs are about, like, rainbows. So I thought, what a cool way to teach, you know, to integrate. I think I'll make a Spotify list for this class. And then they just have so many programs for teachers. And then you get a certificate. So I got a certificate. And finally, bear with me. They have a lot of programs, again, if you live in the area. They even have programs for itty-bitty children, like less than 1 year old. They have tours for people with low or no vision. And they have tours for children with autism. So it's just really, really neat. Children on the autism spectrum and their families. So I just want to do a shout-out. to about the workshops that they do and that they have virtual art available for educators too. Okay. I'm so excited to go in the future. Can I go on Saturday? Yeah, and they have a newsletter. So if you go to their website, you can sign up for their newsletter. Also, whatever I learn Saturday, I'll try to share with you guys. Okay, resources for teachers, the new teacher blog, even if you're not a new teacher, it's just fun to read. Or if you want to write for the blog, I need bloggers. So I run that website. Also, I run a Twitter chat every Sunday night. It's Tech's Edu Chat. I moderate it, but there's usually experts in the field that run the chat, and there's questions, and it's just kind of fun. And it's Tech's Edu Chat, 8 to 9 p.m. Central every Sunday. Okay, that's it, you guys. Good job. Don't stress. No one's allowed to stress. Everything you're learning will help you to teach, whether you're teaching now or you're going to be teaching in the future. And it will help you to be proud of becoming a teacher. So remind yourselves of why you're in grad school and that it's all for the greater good of learning. Keep calm. You're a great teacher. Stay focused on your goals and learn all you can. And remember to take breaks while studying or learning or reading or working. So take breaks. I made this comic on makebelievecomics.com. That's it, you guys. Tell us in the chat window, what is a goal you have or any thoughts on ideas from the webinar, like something you want to try or stood out to you or next steps or something like that. I'll turn off the recording.